Hello, it's Dorian. I've missed you. It's been a while. Max and I will be catching up and releasing a couple spooky episodes for you later this month. Thank you for your patience. But to tide you over, we've got a little something extra for you. Many of you know that we have a Patreon, which is a website where you can pledge a little money every month to support our podcast. And in exchange, you get bonus content, including Patreon-exclusive episodes. Today, we're unlocking one of those episodes to share with you. This one is on the 1981 horror classic, The Evil Dead. If you like this episode, consider supporting us at patreon.com/predeadboys. Your contributions help us keep the podcast running, and you get goodies in return for as little as $1 per month. That's less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Patrons who support with at least $5 a month get access to all of our bonus episodes. That includes our coverage of video games like A Mortician's Tale and Animal Crossing, movies like The Lighthouse, and later this month we will be discussing Mandy, and our two-parter on the album The Black Parade by My Chemical Romance. So check that out. Again, that's patreon.com/predeadboys. Thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon already, and thank you to everyone for listening to us and for all of your support over the years. We hope you enjoy this little sample of our bonus content. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Media Corner. It is a bonus podcast where Max and I talk about movies, music, video games, books, just creative media from a death-positive perspective. Obviously, my name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. How you doing, Max? You are you're in a hot room in a on a hot day in Ohio.
You gonna let me talk, or are you just gonna talk for
me? I don't know. I'm a little delirious from the heat, I'll be honest. Yeah. So I'll get my shit together, but how are you doing?
Well, I'm in a hot room on a hot day in Ohio, so you pretty much nailed it. No, I'm it's fine. I don't know. Quarantined. Woke up at 9 a.m., watched this movie, which was kind of a fun treat for my morning.
Yeah. What did you watch today at 9 a.m., starting your day off?
That kind of led to my first misadventure of the day. I watched this movie on a website that I cannot name.
A legal website?
I watched this movie on a website without realizing that it has basically the same name as another movie. Today we're talking about not the film Evil Dead, but The Evil Dead. The Evil Dead?
Oh, okay. So The Evil Dead is the 1981 horror film that we said that we were going to discuss today.
Yes.
Did you...
I watched the 1981 version.
Okay. You did not watch the 2013 remake. Is that what almost happened?
Yeah. I was like, why is one in HD and the other is not? And then I figured it out.
There you go.
I know that people give Ohio State a lot of shit for trying to trademark the and saying the Ohio State University and all that. But I feel like Evil Dead is pushing it even harder.
I don't think that they're quite as pretentious about that distinction as the Ohio State University. I will say there is something frustrating about remakes in our day and age where, like, it's fashionable to make a remake and then to just title it almost the exact same thing as the original. And that makes things like looking up a movie to watch for a podcast very annoying. And I wish that they would just name it something different or something. Yeah. But no, we're going to talk about the 1981 horror movie Evil Dead. The Evil Dead. Jesus Christ. real quick, it's directed by Sam Raimi. It's basically about...
You know, he was like 20 when he directed this?
Yes, very, very young. Yeah, it's crazy. Quick synopsis, it's basically these teenagers... Before there was a stereotype of what most horror movies were about, The Evil Dead came out and was about a group of five teenagers that are on a little road trip. They spend the night in a cabin. They find a weird tape and weird things start happening with demonic possession and gore and all kinds of fun stuff. It probably goes without saying, but we're going to just spoil anything that happens in the movie from here on out. So if you have not watched it and you don't want to spoil the experience, just stop listening to this podcast now. But we will go ahead and, you know, talk openly about everything that happens in this movie. And to be clear, we're not going to talk about Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, the Evil Dead remake in 2013, or the Ash versus Evil Dead TV show, or any of the video games. Like, there's a whole fucking franchise that spun off of this movie. We're only going to limit our conversation to this, right? Like, I don't even know if you've seen anything after this movie in the Ash saga.
No, I actually hadn't even seen this. So
this is your first time?
Yes.
Okay. Thoughts?
I loved it, dude. I thought it was super fun. It like didn't rile me up on an intellectual level as much as Texas Chainsaw did. Where Texas Chainsaw had like a message. I don't know if this one does or not. But yeah, Evil Dead, I thought it was super fun. The effects were great. Like, I love The Thing, and I love the practical effects in The Thing. And I thought that this was, like, on par with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that I, like, made notes every time I, like, laughed out loud at the funny parts. And I thought it was just fun. The effects were great. Thought it balanced everything really well. I was really hype about it. I liked it a lot.
Hell yeah. I love too. This is actually maybe the single most serious movie in the whole franchise. Maybe like the remake. The remake definitely has a pretty similar tone, but even in like the most quote unquote serious movie in the series, it's like that's one of Sam Raimi's strengths, is he does a good job blending comedy with a lot of the horrific things that are happening. It just makes for a really fun movie. Like, I'm sure that you could read some kind of critical analysis and like, you know, maybe this is commenting on some cultural moment or something more philosophical. I'm sure there's like anything you can read into it, some stuff like that, but this movie feels very much like it was made for the fun of making movies and made for the fun of watching movies with people. Because it's definitely just like an entertaining, funny, I think scary movie as well. Like, yeah. There's still stuff in there that was like, ugh, like gave me the creeps.
Oh my god, I put a big star next to my least favorite scene, which I'll be happy to talk about when we get into like the effects part.
But okay. Well, I don't have like a specific kind of, you know, agenda or program or anything for us to talk about, so let's try this. Let's go like very vaguely in the order of kind of chronological events that happen in the movie. So again, before it was a trope, Sam Raimi, like, you know, was experimenting with this general plot line of five teenagers staying in a cabin in the woods, dealing with demonic possession. I know that he created a student film like very early on called Within the Woods. That was like basically the proto version of this movie before he got a studio budget to work with. What do you think of like the characters, right? We're introduced to these five teenagers in a car ride. We get to know, like, you know, you got kind of like the cocky one, you got the wisecracking guy, like you have some different tropes kind of established in these characters. But what do you think of that? Is it like real cheesy or just general impressions?
Before we hit the characters, I just want to mention two things about the car ride in the intro.
Yeah.
The fact that the title splash is silent was very strange to me. And there's like no sound for a while. Like not even ambient noise. Like I just thought the version of this movie that I was watching on website didn't have an audio track.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that made me laugh the hardest in this movie is how it opens with them driving down this like windy kind of path, and they're singing like, I don't know, like a kind of like a corny 70s song. Like, it's not, I don't know what song it is, probably because they couldn't license the actual song to play in the car.
Right.
But they're just singing this kind of like power ballady song. Like, it's pleasant. And then at one point there's a shot of the car just like turning a corner and the brakes are like squealing. It was like super funny. They're just singing this boring song and it's like around a corner.
Yeah.
I thought that ruled.
I think that's a good point too, that like the film does a great job of building up dread like the best horror movies do. That for all of its slapstick goofiness and practical effects flexing, it still is very much like setting a tone very early on in the movie. Everything is calm and fun and like somewhat creepy and gets weirder and more violent as it goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's significant. That was probably a willful choice of having it be at least relatively quiet early in the movie. Because that's, you know, a quiet evening camping with friends.
Yeah. Just trying to have fun.
But yeah, that intro is kind of wild. Like, they almost swerve off the road because of a semi-truck, and then, like, the cocky teenager is driving. I gotta look up character names, so I'm not just like...
Scott is the guy's name.
What a douchey name, Scott. Apologies if anybody named Scott is listening to this.
Scott kind of has a face turn in this movie, where he starts, and, like, early on, I just wrote, Scott sucks. And then by the end of Scott's arc, I was like, I kind of like him. He's kind of a,
oh really?
He's not reprehensible. Yeah. I mean, he sucks, but he's not like, I wasn't like, oh good, Scott's dead, you know?
Huh. I'm curious to hear about that. Cause I don't feel exactly the same way, but that's, we'll get to that.
Like, you think he's good? You think Scott's a nice person?
Oh no, I think he sucked. he started sucking and he finished sucking. He never not sucked in my book. I don't see the turn that you see, but I don't know. Maybe you can state your case. So they get to the cabin, and I love, again, with like setting that mood, there's that scene. Like, do you remember when Scott goes up to the door to unlock it? And the wind is kind of rattling the bench.
Yeah.
And there's the, like, Sam Raimi is such a, he has such a good, I don't even know if it's Raimi, like, the cinematographer and, like, the whole film crew, they have a good sense of, like, cool shots that are effective for building a scene. And I love that the camera is kind of looking over the corner of this bench swaying in the wind as Scott is fumbling with the keys trying to unlock it. And it's such a good shot where he's, like, walking away from his friends. And like he's kind of isolated. It's starting to set a creepy mood.
He like stops a couple times.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is good.
Like pauses a little bit, seems apprehensive. And at one point the bench just very abruptly and unnaturally stops swaying in the wind. And he kind of glances over at it and then glances back at his friends who are just staring back at him. And I think he says something like, oh, it's one of these keys somewhere. And like fumbles with it and unlocks it. I love that moment because it already kind of takes away a little bit of his confidence and power and sets you up for like, oh, they're dealing with something weird and beyond their control. Even the cocky guy who has it all together is a little freaked out. And I love that too, because like we can go full spoiler. We don't need to go like not revealing anything, because this movie obviously goes apeshit. It's very gory. It's very slapstick in some parts.
Yeah.
And I just always think it's funny that it starts out with these very nuanced, like, delicate touches of cinematic flair before they just go hog wild with, like, there's blood spraying everywhere. There's prosthetic body parts getting chopped off. It's great. I love it.
Like, who's Ash's sister? What's his sister's name?
Cheryl.
Cheryl, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like... they're inside and they're eating like tacos for dinner or whatever they're eating.
Right.
And before that, Cheryl is drawing, like she's sketching a clock. And the sketch of the clock is very well done. Like it's like someone clearly spent time to actually sketch this clock out.
Yeah.
And I like that. It was just a nice little Nice little touch.
Yeah. There's a fair amount of craft in there. Yeah. And that's another like freaky subtle thing where she's drawing the clock and then the what do you call it? Like the pendulum inside just stops at like midair. It's freaky. It's creepy. So shit kind of hits the fan for them when they find this tape recorder and they listen back to the tape and it is the sound of an archaeologist reading pages from the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which they also eventually find in the basement of this random ass cabin in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, that's kind of where like the original working title of this movie was The Book of the Dead. And that's kind of like the item that the whole series revolves around.
Uh-huh.
Have we gotten into anything like, I don't know how much you've researched, but have we talked about like any kind of Necronomicons or books of the dead? Or like, is that something that you're researching that has any like roots in reality?
Let me be right back.
Oh. Max is physically getting up and walking into a different room, and I'm very concerned that he's going to bring back a book bound in human flesh.
Get my headphones back on.
What do you got there?
What are you asking if I...
Oh, what? Wait, the contrast is... The Book of the Dead. Who's that by?
This is by the hieroglyphic transcript of the Papyrus of Ani, the translation into English, and an introduction by E.A. Wallace Budge, late keeper of the Egyptian and Assyrian antiquities in the British Museum.
Oh, well, there you go. Don't read any of that out loud, but I don't know. Maybe that's fodder for a future mainline episode.
Just books of the dead. I think it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I think this copy was donated when I worked at the library, and it just smells like smoke. So we couldn't do anything with it. So I took it.
Absolutely reeking of cigarettes.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be interesting. I did want to like mention that because I thought maybe there's something there that would be interesting for us to like do research on. You know, do another episode of our award-winning, like hard-hitting, deeply researched main podcast. Clearly, that's not like, I don't know if there's any kind of like homage to reality in this movie.
So there are a lot of real books of the dead. Uh-huh. But I think this is based on like the Lovecraftian Necronomicon, which I think the book in 1981, Evil Dead, transforms into the Necronomicon proper at a certain point.
Huh.
As I was reading in the fandom, I don't know. Again, I haven't seen any of the others.
Yeah, there is something about like a lot of horror movies that spawn a huge franchise. I think something that frequently gets lost is once they start defining a lot of the lore, it takes away a lot from the original movie. And so I find myself kind of resenting a lot of franchises.
Uh-huh.
Like my favorite horror franchise and maybe my favorite like movie franchise of any kind is Alien, because that first movie is perfect in my opinion.
It's tight.
It's amazing, but there's so much that gets explained about the xenomorphs later on and it gets like really fleshed out and you're like, I don't know about that. They get really heavy-handed with the mother metaphor stuff with Ripley and you're like, okay, I guess. But there's just something so like scary about seeing it for the first time, and I feel like that's definitely here in this movie. Like before they get into all of the rules of the Book of the Dead, like, I don't know. I think there is something cool about just not knowing and having it be kind of vague.
Uh-huh. And kind of as we're talking about the discovery and stuff, one of my favorite little Easter eggs I noticed is that in the basement on the table where they find everything, there's like an old poster or letterboard for The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah.
And I think you can really only see hills and eyes, but like, what else is that?
Right.
And I like to imagine that this like stately professor that collected all this stuff was a really big fan of The Hills Have Eyes. Makes me happy.
he was a horror fan, but he got a little bit too close to the true horrors of the world.
Have we talked about the video game Eternal Darkness as well?
No. I vaguely know some things about that game. GameCube game, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I know some things about it. I know it had a lot of, like, breaking the fourth wall type, like, messing with you as you're playing the game.
Yes.
Pretending like it was changing the volume on your TV and stuff like that.
Very dark game. Very weird. But it reminds me a lot of, like, the conceit of that game is your character goes to your grandfather's old mansion and you find a book there that's bound in human flesh.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. And you open it and it unleashes this horrible evil and you have to kind of jump around these different timelines and it's a book of the dead, basically. Okay. And so I was watching this movie and being like, oh, that's a lot like Eternal Darkness. And I thought it was cool, kind of a cool homage to that.
No, Max, Eternal Darkness is a lot like Evil Dead, okay? No, I'm just kidding.
So you talked earlier about how like the lore is kind of unknowable and weird. I like how you're kind of dropped into the history of this book, like in media res, by they just find a tape recorder and hit play. And it's just this guy talking about the book down there, the Naturan DeMonto. I think that's the version of this in the...
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. But he's just kind of talking about this book and how it's bound in human flesh and how saying the words aloud releases the demons from it. And it reminds me a lot of listening to old Coast to Coast AM broadcasts as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And how much I loved those. And in particular, it reminded me of this segment about the like Russian pit to hell, which is this incredible old Coast to Coast feature where Art Bell is talking about how a listener sent in a tape that was supposedly recovered from this Russian project where they dug miles down into the earth and reached hell. And they lowered a tape recorder in there and like heard screaming and stuff like that. And Art Bell is just like a great showman and does an excellent job of building this foreboding tension before introducing the tape. And this professor talking into the tape recorder, who you never see, is like spot on Art Bell cadence. And oh my God, it was so good.
Huh.
I was really hyped about it.
I wonder if that was an intentional homage, because I could see Sam Raimi and crew being a Coast to Coast fan. Like that show was going on around that time, right? In the early 80s?
Let me check. Coast to Coast? AM, baby. Oh, it actually started in 1984. So
Ooh. They
were kind of mastering the craft before Art Bell even got in there, which is cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. I love the tape recording as a way to introduce the lore. I thought that was cool.
It's a good exposition trick of like, I was kind of cracking up like about how in there's a trope, especially in video games, of like apparently every single human being who ever lived keeps a detailed diary of everything that happens in their life right leading up to when they die. Because every Resident Evil game you play, it's like,
yep,
you know, July 11th, I experimented with the dead body to see what would happen. July 13th. Oh my God, the body has come back to life. I don't know what will happen. Scribbled like pen as it trails off the page.
As they're murdered.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to have those easy exposition devices sometimes for some good storytelling.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the tree scene? What can be said about the tree scene? I think this is interesting because, okay, so if you don't know, I mean, again, spoiler. It's Cheryl, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So Cheryl at one point takes a walk out in the woods, which, you know, bad idea to just go and do that alone at night in the middle of nowhere. But whatever you could possibly anticipate happening that would be bad, I don't think you would have imagined that she would have been sexually assaulted by a tree and possessed by demons. But that's what happens. This is an iconic scene in this movie. And I have some thoughts about this. I have some thoughts. What did you think of this? How did you deal with this when you watched this for the first time?
It's weird because the trees play like a very tangential part in the, I guess, lore and how the in-universe operation of this works. Like, they are, the trees prevent them from leaving this cabin and are very sentient and evil for some reason. But yeah, it's never really fleshed out that much. I don't know. I don't really have anything to add about this scene other than, like, it's pretty intense.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a difficult scene that I don't think ages very well because it's like a very intense, horrific thing that happens that's like not really like sufficiently earned, I think. Like, it's just such a, it's a weird thing to like include in a movie that's like as disjointed as this is. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
The tree rape scene is like a controversial topic with this franchise. And I think that they were kind of figuring out some of the lore as they went, because there's definitely some notion that the trees are preventing them from leaving, but that also doesn't seem to be a thing that recurs throughout the series, to my knowledge. Like, trees are not really involved in anything else.
Interesting.
I think in the remake, it's a little bit interesting that instead of, you know, the bridge being destroyed, preventing them from leaving, there is a flood over the bridge that they needed to take to get to the cabin.
Okay.
So maybe there's this whole thing where, like, nature is working against them.
Okay.
But that does kind of get at the heart of what is arguably a fair critique of the entire Evil Dead series. It's incoherent as fuck. Like, the lore in particular is just super inconsistent and weird and disjointed. And you definitely get like a tonal shift for every movie that has come out in this series. Partially because it's bizarre. I haven't watched a lot of the TV show Ash versus the Evil Dead. I don't know how much they clarify with how the deadites work and stuff. Maybe there's something there with the trees, but I know, you know, in hindsight, just like throwing a rape scene in your movie just to get like some scares is, I don't know. I think as a storyteller, you could do better than that.
Yeah.
I understand why it's there, that it's like some spirit possessing a woman and it's this horrific process, but I know they included that too in the remake. And that was just kind of like, this is just
doing like this
kind of oogie thing to be watching that I'd rather not. I don't know if this needed to be included. I guess, you know, there is, in defense of the filmmakers, there is a horrific tone to it. It's not supposed to be like an enjoyable, titillating thing or something. Because that's definitely like, there's nothing that comes close to this as far as like sexual violence in any of the other movies, in any other scene, as far as I know. Especially when they take the much more comedic, lighthearted turn in Evil Dead 2 and then Army of Darkness. It's like, there's nothing on this level of like, you know, weird, gross, like sexual violence. I don't know. I feel like we need to talk about that and how fucking weird that scene is.
Yeah, it is. I think the way you stated it as being unearned is pretty accurate. It does kind of feel like it's kind of thrown in there almost arbitrarily.
Right. I do think that a big thing with this movie is that the cast of characters are all slowly losing their minds over what's happening. That this film is really trying to depict, like, everybody is getting not just physically attacked, but also psychologically scarred from the things that are happening.
Yes.
And I think that that's expressed a lot more directly and effectively in the possessions that happen inside the cabin.
Yeah.
So what happens after this tree scene is that Cheryl returns to the cabin in a panic. She's like, I want to go home. They try to leave and the bridge is broken, so they can't escape the cabin. Everybody just goes to turn in for the night, and they're trying to calm down and relax and just wait it out until the morning.
There's a very goofy thing that happens twice in that sequence where, like, Ash is a very strange character,
mm-hmm.
where he's, like, not really good at anything, it seems like. Like, he's not heroic in any way. Like, he just kind of is quiet and wanders off by himself a lot. But twice in that sequence, he grabs Cheryl in the dark. And it's like, buddy, you got to stop, like, grabbing people and not saying anything.
Right.
Like, he opens the door and grabs her hand as she's trying to unlock it. And then he, like, gets out of the car and just wanders away at one point. And she's, like, out of the car screaming for him. And he just walks up behind her and just, like, grabs her.
Yeah, he's...
It's like, all right.
Yeah, not very tactful behavior in a horrific situation. Don't recommend doing that. But that's a good point, too, is it's no secret that Ash is depicted as a hero in later movies and TV shows. That's kind of what the franchise is known for in a lot of ways. It's like, oh, Ash is like this real sarcastic, like wisecracking guy, especially Army of Darkness is where that comes out in full. But before that, he's just like a regular dude. And kind of like Alien and maybe a handful of other horror movies, you don't expect him to be the lone survivor that survives the whole horrific ordeal. You're just kind of like, this guy's kind of an idiot. Like,
yeah.
And likewise, well, you know, it's not that Ripley from Alien is an idiot. Quite the contrary. She's very smart and like makes a lot of good decisions that help lead to her surviving everything. But it is still very much like the people that you expect to be in charge or like the people who are kind of depicted as the main character. This movie throws you for a loop. You're not really like,
yeah,
you know, confident who's going to survive this as you watch it, which makes it scarier. But Ash in particular is just like kind of a doofus in this movie. I know he gives a toast at one point and he's like, a friend once said, and he like can't remember it. It's yeah. such a weird, funny moment. But yeah, he's just kind of a doofus in general. So I guess it's not all that surprising that he would just be, you know, not delicate with his sister who is just traumatized. And he's a goober in this movie.
A thing I want to say in Ash's defense is that as a man with a unibrow, Ash's unibrow is, Bruce Campbell's unibrow is like prominent in this movie.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of like close-up shots of his face and there's just, he's just got a very clear unibrow. And I think we need more unibrow representation in film.
There's a lot of unibrow shaming in our day and age.
It would make me feel more comfortable if that existed. So thanks to Bruce Campbell here.
I will say your eyebrows are looking well-groomed today.
Well, that's because I'm very far away from my low-res camera. So thank you.
Okay, I want to talk about the possession because I think it was well set up. It was pretty cool. So they're all chilling out in the cabin and Linda and Shelley, the other two like women who are in this group of friends, they're playing with cards. And I think one of them is like trying to guess what the cards are without looking at them.
The
ESP, the other one's just just like flat out lying about like, yeah, that's it. Oh my gosh, you did a good job. Which is funny.
It's like it's like she holds up like a eight of hearts and the girl's like, it's a seven of clubs. No, diamonds.
Yeah, like, wow. Yeah. Exactly. And just doesn't show her, just puts it back in the deck.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden Cheryl, who's like spacing out and staring out the window off on the side, starts calling out the cards correctly, and she's not even looking at the deck.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little unsettling. Both of the other girls look over at her and they're like, what's going on? And then she spins around and is a deadite, the kind of zombie, kind of demonic possession sort of monster that this movie franchise invented. But now the practical special effects really kick in. And
I thought that was so good.
Oh, man. Yeah, not only is she decked out in full, like, scarred up, bloodshot eye, gross makeup, there's also, like, a fan blasting her hair to the ceiling and lights coming out of nowhere. It's so much fun to watch these movies and see the way they use practical effects to really, like, make a very jarring moment in a movie. But that's when shit starts hitting the fan and people start getting possessed and messing with each other. They lock Cheryl in the basement at one point, and she pretends to not be possessed so that they can let her out, but then they catch on to it. Yeah. What was your... I know, like, you are not... You don't shy away from horror too much, but I also know that sometimes you can get skittish in some, like, scary situations. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what your, like, mental state was while you were watching this part of the movie, where it was total pandemonium.
Okay, so... I thought a lot of it, like, the makeup is excellent. Like, everyone just looks crusty and, like, glazed over and gross. The personality that they all kind of independently develop as deadites is cool. Like, how Cheryl in the basement is, like, the boss, for lack of a better term.
Right.
And then is it Shelley? Who's Bruce Campbell's girlfriend?
Linda.
Linda. And Linda is very childish. Yeah. And just kind of sits and giggles a lot.
Yeah, there's clearly different personalities to, like, whatever creatures are inhabiting their bodies, right? Where, like, Linda is much more docile and just kind of giggling maniacally watching everything happen. Cheryl's demon is, like, actively trying to attack and kill people and stabs, I believe, Shelley in the ankle with a pencil.
Yes, that scene is the hardest that I have, like, cringed and, like, felt really uncomfortable in a movie in a long time. But it's just, like, a close-up shot of this ankle and Cheryl just takes a pencil and just jams it in there, and it's just, like, ripping at the space between, like, the ankle bone and the tendon.
Yeah.
Oh my god, just, like, blood is just gushing out. I was, like, squirming on my couch as I was watching it.
I love how that's handled. Sam Raimi movies always have this kind of weird rhythm where, like, most movies today, when there is shocking, jarring violence, it's kind of flashed on screen quickly and then cut away to reactions, and they linger on people's reactions. Sam Raimi movies, I feel like, spend just as much time focusing on someone's reaction to violence as the actual violence itself, and depicts it in a sickening way. He doesn't do this quite as much with his more lighthearted comedy movies.
Spider-Man.
Right. Not a lot of gore in that one. But I kind of love that he will just kind of put you in a situation and make you watch something really fucking heinous and, like, awful. Because it is an effective tool for, you know, putting you in a similar frame of mind as the characters, kind of driven mad by a lot of the insane violence that you're watching. It definitely makes for, like, a weird hybrid of you're having a good time, you're laughing, but you're also watching somebody's Achilles tendon get jacked up with a sharpened pencil.
Yeah.
And, like, you just got to sit there and watch it for a couple minutes.
Yeah. Oh, I thought that was brutal.
It is. And yeah, it's just, that's a bold filmmaking move that I don't think a lot of filmmakers bother to do. Or it's, like, total, you know, Eli Roth's Hostel sort of situation where, like, the only thing that they're lingering on is violence and there's no plot.
Yeah.
But yeah, props to Raimi and crew for that scene. It is rough.
The other scene that kind of takes place in the chaos section that was, like, oh my god, is when Shelley gets stabbed by the weird skull knife thing.
Right. The Kandarian dagger.
Yeah. And who Scotty tells Ash looks like his last girlfriend.
Great line.
But yeah, when Shelly gets stabbed, there's just this horrible screaming that goes on for like a while. And like, my wife and I have been watching Waco recently, and I like Michael Shannon a lot, but Waco is weird because it's kind of like they made David Koresh really hot and sympathetic.
It's Taylor Kitsch plays him. It's weird. He's sexy.
Yeah, he's very hot. He's got like an 8-pack.
Right.
But there's a scene in that movie when they show the ATF setting up like PSYOPs. Like they just cut all the power to the Waco compound, the Branch Davidian compound, and start blasting like super loud atonal feedback and dolphin noise and just like engines revving at the compound. I don't know, the screaming with tons of just extra sound thrown in reminded me of that. Just like the people whose job it is to like mix that noise in AR is, they're incredible.
Right. It's impressively done, but it's also, like you pointed out, that this was the Lovecraftian Book of the Dead, right? And like, a lot of people think of H.P. Lovecraft and they think, oh, tentacle monsters and like green smoke, and there's like a visual representation of Lovecraftian stories that people like get in their mind. But what was really at the heart of his stories was this whole concept of like unspeakable horrors and evils that you can't even like visually see or express directly. It's all stuff that's like mentally destroying you, right? It's like psychological horror more than anything physical. And a lot of people today like miss the boat completely when they create this mythology of like, there's this tentacled monster and then this other tentacled monster is different from him. And like, there's a whole lore spun out of that. And it's interesting how Sam Raimi created this like very visceral, violent movie that in a sense is like more in the spirit of Lovecraftian horror than a lot of so-called Lovecraftian stories, right?
Yeah.
Like the whole, it's not just that things are violent, it's that you are subject to jarring images and sounds that are relentless, and you are like forced to stare at an ankle getting stabbed for a couple minutes and forced to hear people screaming for like nearly a half hour nonstop of this movie. And that's something that carries out, especially through this whole series, is like the evil spirits are just like, it is an assault of sound and on the senses. It's like a lot is happening to you as you are watching it. And I think that's interesting. That's like almost kind of a ham-fisted way of expressing psychological terror, but it also kind of works. I think like I haven't seen Evil Dead in the theater, but I did see the remake in the theater, and there's a lot of that sort of sensibility with the violence and the sound design and everything there too. Uh-huh. And there is something about like, I walked out of the theater like with adrenaline rushing, you know, I was jacked up and I was like, oh my God, you know, like having a visceral movie experience, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. But, like, just it's like not the wall just, of sound.
Yeah, there's something more going on than just like, you know, showing the goriest possible effect that you can. There's like subjecting the viewer to not just entertainment, but also making them go a little bit crazy as they watch something.
Yeah.
That I think Raimi achieves pretty well in this movie. Like, if anything's horrific about this movie, I think it's definitely like, it's an experience that you watch and you're like almost a little exhausted after the process.
Yeah.
So yeah, all of this shit happens, and then I guess that, like, Ash kind of, he's the only survivor after all of his friends have been possessed. He dismembers them and stabs them with the Kandarian dagger and, like, survives. And then we're just kind of left with, like, some demon attacks him as he's escaping the cabin. And you know, it goes on from there in future movies. That franchise goes in all kinds of fun places. Maybe we can do another bonus episode about Evil Dead 2 and the stuff that comes after.
The lore.
Yeah. But yeah, that's about it. I don't know, any final thoughts on this movie? Would you recommend it? What's your IGN.com score out of 10?
Honestly, I think it's like probably an 8 in my book. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's less than an hour and a half long. There's like not fluff in it. I don't know. The parts that are goofy, I really like. One of my favorite parts that I also laughed a lot at and thought was great was at the end when Ash finally goes down into the basement again after Cheryl has escaped. And he goes down and there's just a pipe. And then the pipe bursts and just sprays like 10 gallons of blood on him.
I forgot about that part. That is so funny.
And then there's the cut where like the light bulb is filling up with blood and there's blood coming out of the electrical sockets in the wall. I thought that ruled. I saw the sockets and I was like, hell yeah, that's so tight.
This is just such a fun movie.
Yeah.
It's like the Looney Tunes version of a horror movie in so many parts like that. Which they definitely amplify in the sequels, but there's still enough moments of Ash just being like, oh, go.
Yeah, like he, when he cuts Deadite Linda's head off with the shovel, and she still lands on top of him and is just spraying blood out of her neck at him.
Onto his face, yes.
And just the practical effects of when the Book of the Dead is finally burned and their bodies are decomposing and their tongues are like whipping around everywhere. And like, I was going through the Wikipedia page and couldn't find it, but it seems like when any of the Deadites get cut, it's just like a torrent of milk is shooting out of them. It's like, it's not blood. It's white. It's some kind of white fluid.
Maybe ectoplasm or some shit.
Like gross ectoplasm. And at one point, Scott is dead. And it's a shot of like Scott's sleeve and his hand is decomposing. And then like a bunch of like oatmeal just burps out of his sleeve.
That was like, literally oatmeal too.
Was that? Okay. It was like, I was like, that's just grits. It's like grits or oatmeal or something.
Right.
And it's the only time that material shows up, but I was like, that rules.
Yeah. It's such a like goopy ending. There's literal bubbling sound effects that are playing too. It's like as they're melting in this stop motion animated decomposition. So good. So, you know, we had our bonus episodes on like Uzumaki and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I know the latter episode in particular, like we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, this reflects a lot about like society and real world issues. Even if it's a fictional movie, there's like a lot of meat here to chew on intellectually.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what do you make of this movie? Like, this is a death positive podcast. We should probably talk about like some profound deep things about death. I mean, does this movie have any value in that light? Or
oh boy, does it? I didn't see much.
I don't think so.
Stephen King said it was tight, but this was also during Stephen King's like deep cocaine phase.
Oh yeah.
So you can take that for whatever you want. I think it's tight. I'm not in a deep cocaine phase.
Yeah. I guess, what is it do you think about, like, you and I both enjoy stuff like this, even if there's not some big profound point to make? Like, are we okay, are we crazy if like we find movies with like brutal violence and demonic possession fun and funny? Like, what do you make of that attitude of people who are horror fans, that you just make light of death like this?
I was kind of thinking about that as I watched this movie, because I had a coworker who, like, Evil Dead was her favorite movie franchise. I remember when the Evil Dead musical came to Columbus and she was like front row in the splash zone.
Wow, I forgot that they made a musical.
Yeah.
And there was literally a splash zone.
Yeah, it was like the first three rows. It was like you're
like
gonna
a Gwar
get
concert.
Yeah. But she was super into it, and you know, like I can see watching this and being like just hyped about how over the top it is and the practical effects and like the makeup and the like misfits level violence of mm-hmm. it. And it's kind of a fun escape, you know. I think when you think a lot about the stuff that's popular with death now and like true crime, this is never going to happen. And it doesn't.
Hey man, never say never.
I don't, maybe I shouldn't really be reading this book that I have very loudly. But like, even with like series like The Last of Us or Walking Dead, it focuses on the very human aspects of supernatural dark things, and Evil Dead doesn't. Like, I don't think I know a single thing about any of these characters other than Cheryl likes to draw,
right?
And that's about it. Like, they don't really have a lot of development, and it's kind of an escape, you know. It's like, this is horror, but it's not even like Jaws, where it makes me afraid to like swim. It's not Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where it makes me afraid of like inbred hillbillies or something. It's just like total escapism.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I think about some of the stuff we talked about in Terror Management, where like, you know, life is like, our culture is composed of a lot of distractions from death. And I don't know, this might kind of fit that category, ironically, despite there being a lot of death in this movie. But I think there is something to be said for, like, you don't need to have a profound, deep, powerful statement to make to have, like, you know, violent but fun media.
Yeah.
Like, these are very fun movies, which is a very strange thing to say about a movie that features a tree rape scene. I understand that. I don't. That's why I feel like some hangups about that scene in particular. But yeah, I mean, like, I know one feeling I frequently have when I watch movies that are deeply horrifying or jarring is that I'll leave the theater or I'll turn off the TV and just think like, wow, that was crazy. And just kind of feeling like, yeah, not only was I briefly distracted from the stuff that I've got going on in real life, but also like, it really doesn't seem like that big of a deal. A lot of the life stresses I have when you see people who are put into insane situations, like demons possessing them in the middle of a cabin.
Yeah.
Like, life is okay if I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit easier to get through my shit when I recognize that there's way bigger, stupider, worse shit that fictional characters have dealt with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It feels very proto Cabin in the Woods. In that sense.
Oh yeah. The trope of a cabin in the woods being haunted, like,
and they go down into the basement and find the relic, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe this started that trope. Like, I don't believe there is a preceding example of deep horrors hidden in a cabin in the woods before Evil Dead. That's not to you, Max. That's like anybody listening, just prove me wrong. I'm curious, genuinely, if there are examples of that earlier than this movie.
I mean, there's like Night of the Living Dead has the house on the hill thing, but yeah. It's still not as tropeable, you know?
Yeah, and it's definitely not isolated in the middle of the woods away from society. Like, that was kind of a house in the middle of a neighborhood, right?
I thought it was like, I don't know, it's been a long time. But
yeah,
I thought it was like in a, like by a graveyard or something, but kind of more pastoral.
Yeah, you might be right. That's a movie we should cover on a bonus episode.
That's
at some point.
A good one.
Well, we're running about an hour long. I think we've talked about this sufficiently. first of all, just thanks again for being a Patreon supporter and listening to these bonus episodes. We really appreciate it. Tell us if you've seen Evil Dead and what you thought about it. And also if you have any ideas for future bonus content that we should make and things to cover on the Pre-Dead Media Corner. You can email us predeadboys@gmail.com. You can join our Discord and talk to us there. You can join our Facebook group. Just search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast. And also, we are at Pre-Dead Boys on Twitter and Instagram. Just talk to us. We want to talk to you.
Hell yeah.
We don't do a podcast to just listen to only ourselves talk in circles about movies. We do that and then sell it to you through Patreon. No, but we love hearing from y'all, and we do really appreciate just that you care enough to support our podcast. Max, you got any parting words before we sign off here and go watch some other horrific movie?
Oh, I think I'm going to bring my dog over to meet you.
Yes. The opposite of horror is meeting that pup.
Well, we'll see what mood she's in. She'll be sweet. Nothing too crazy. I think it's fun. I was surprised, like, having not seen anything in the Evil Dead franchise before, the two things I knew about it were, like, the chainsaw hand and the boomstick stuff.
Okay, here is my very brief breakdown of all Evil Dead media. Evil Dead 2... there's some confusion, like, is it a remake? Is it a sequel? It is a sequel. Basically, the first 5 minutes are kind of confusing because it's Ash and then four different actors from the first movie. And you're like, did he go back with four friends? What the fuck is wrong with him? It has been explained by the filmmakers and by Bruce Campbell, the guy who plays Ash, that they, because there were some, like, rights management issues and studio changes, they didn't actually own the rights to the movie that they made.
Okay.
So they couldn't include footage from the first movie. So they
had to
do
like a Taylor Swift and re-record it.
Right. Like previously on Evil Dead, they get like re-recorded that part with new actors, like recast all the actors and showed them all dying again. So it's kind of fun. You get like a 5 minute condensed version that's like very manic of the first movie in Evil Dead 2. But it is a sequel, and that is still kind of scary, but definitely starts introducing a lot of the slapstick silliness, and Ash becomes more of like a sarcastic character in that.
Uh-huh.
Army of Darkness is a direct sequel to that. That is almost not horror at all. It's just like kind of a comedy with like Indiana Jones sort of adventure movie vibes. But very much like Ash coming into his own as like a smarmy, sarcastic asshole character. And like the iconic boomstick line is in there and all of that good stuff.
Okay.
After that is some other stuff I can't vouch for. The video games are all bad. Like I've only played like a total of 2 hours of like two different Evil Dead video games, but they're all very bad and borderline unplayable. And continuity wise, they don't matter with the story at all, as far as I'm concerned. I've heard nothing but good things about Ash and the Evil Dead, the TV series. And I know it got canceled, but then they put the whole thing on Netflix, I believe. It's like on some streaming services. That sounds like it's worth watching if you enjoy that sort of thing. I do highly recommend the remake from 2013. It was directed by Fede Alvarez, and that is definitely more of like a jarring, nerve-wracking watch today.
Uh-huh.
That definitely continues the spirit of like a like very good practical special effects. I will say, dude, like if you get queasy, there's a lot of Max. In particular, there is one scene that does involve your most hated subject matter of anything horrific. It involves a mouth. Not teeth, but a tongue and a box cutter.
It's like every time I think about like that's my one thing with The Thing is the scene where like Wilford Brimley runs up on that guy and then just puts his hand in his mouth and starts like ripping his mouth apart from the inside.
Yeah. I know. I remember, like, we talked about that in that bonus episode we made of, like, the thing that freaked me out was the chest cavity opening and swallowing that dude's arms and
cutting
them off. And for you, it was just like, you know, he kind of, Wilford Brimley sticks his hand in a dude's mouth and kind of jostles it around. But the Evil Dead remake from 2013, there are moments from that, like, stick with me to this day. It's such a, like, amazing piece of, like, special effects driven horror. Like, I can't recommend that enough for anybody who's a horror buff and wants to see some, like, really jarring special effects. It's so well done. I loved it.
I'm gonna have to check it out.
But, you know, kind of a content warning, it does remake the tree rape scene. So that is something to keep in mind. Like, unfortunately, that was a holdover that they included for reasons beyond my comprehension.
Uh-huh.
But beyond that scene, if you can stomach that scene and get through it, I think it's a very, like, I felt weird describing it as fun, but that is the way that I describe these movies.
Yeah.
It's like, they're gory and horrifying and terrible things happen to people, but they're also kind of fun.
Yeah. They're escapist, you know?
For sure. All right. Should we cut it off there?
Yeah, I think I'm good. I'm ready to...
All right. Sick. Max and Dorian here reminding you, as always, that you're gonna rock.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.